some clean bass lines by Jerry on the bass.
They're slapping those bass lines.
Slapping the bass.
Yeah, it's all about that bass.
No treble.
Nope.
I feel like we made that joke before.
but it's always true.
It's true. It's an evergreen joke, really.
Yeah.
In that it's about trees.
And it's...
At its core.
And it's topical.
Oh, for sure.
Tropical, if it's about trees.
There are trees in some tropical regions.
The tropics are flush with lush trees.
Yeah, the plant life likes warm, much like myself, likes warm weather.
Yeah, yeah. Wrong part of the region of the United States that you're living in for the warm weather.
It's true.
Couldn't help but notice it was chilly cold out.
It's getting warmer, though, in most of the United States. I think the other day it was the first day that it was above freezing in all of the contiguous United States, I think, of the
year.
That's
disgusting.
Yeah.
Contiguous.
But, I mean, it could just be one little corner of, like, Minnesota that's not freezing. And it would still consider it to be in that state.
Yeah.
It's not freezing.
Because we, for whatever reason, have still allowed Minnesota to be part of the Union. I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't get it. What do they have? Mall of America? Well, make it Mall of Canada. What do I care?
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough.
Yeah.
If it were Mall of America, it'd be like dead center of Kansas.
Yeah. Right? Well, might be skewed a little bit by how far west and south Hawaii is.
Yeah, that's true. The absolute dead center of the contiguous United States,
gross,
I believe, is Lazarus, Kansas.
Oh.
Because that's one of those...
That's where the United States came back to life.
Well, this is a movie podcast, so this is a relevant tangent. That is the center of America. So whenever the Oscars come out, and inevitably all the best pictures are good films that no one's seen, they go to Kansas and they say, did any of these movies show at your theater? And, you know, Joe Blow,
Kansanian.
Call in and tell us what it actually is. Kansanese. They speak Kansanese there?
They do. Yeah. But it's just they speak their own dialect.
There's like four or five dialects in Kansas, right? Kansanese. And they ask him, you know, which movie did you like the best? And I like the one with the frog in it, you know. And that's not one of the ones that was nominated because they don't nominate movies about frogs.
Which is really unfortunate because there are some frog-based movies that are fan-frog-intastic.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. Princess and the Frog was a good one.
Sure. Yeah, but that one was good.
Yeah, that was a good one. Uh-huh.
It was a fine movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it was Disney, so I did probably got a nomination or something.
Sure.
We should do an animated episode.
Oh, what are we planning now? Are we planning on the podcast? This is what people want to hear.
I think
folks, write in. Tell us. Do you want to hear us plan here? Also, give us some suggestions.
Yeah, maybe there's some, but maybe there are some of those real PrimeFlix nerds and they want to hear the behind the scenes stuff. So they want to hear us on the podcast talking about the podcast. You know, they're like really meta.
Sure.
They're like PrimeFlix nerds, you know.
Maybe we should talk about the podcast on the podcast and then record a separate track that is talking about us talking about
the podcast,
the podcast.
Yeah.
It's like a commentary.
Like Talking Dead is to Walking Dead.
Yeah. I don't have AMC.
It would be Prime Time Flicks or something like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do we call the listeners? Every podcast has a nickname.
Sally.
For all right. The Sallys. The Sallys. No, that just doesn't roll off the tongue. Flixers?
The Flixers. The Flixinese.
Mother Flixers. the Flixinese. Do they speak Flixinese? I don't know.
The Primers.
Primers.
The Primers.
Primers, depending on if they're British or not.
The Flixian Nation.
The P-Fubs.
The P.F. Changs.
The Afflixted.
Ooh, I like that one.
Afflixed.
Afflixed.
The Prime Flixed.
The
Flaccid. No, that's not good.
Well, I mean, who can say?
It depends.
Yeah.
Depends on what part of the night it is, you know what I mean?
Well, I guess, our voices might be sexy to someone. Oh, I see what you did there. Symbolism. misused. It's a misuse of the symbol.
It was. We need that. Where were we on that one, Jerry? No, sorry. Jerry plays the bass. I don't know why I was yelling at him for not playing the drums correctly.
I don't know.
He should be a five-tool guy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Keyboard, yeah. Bass,
running, hitting, and fielding.
That's what it is. You remember when Barry Zito had released that album of all the hits? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty good. It was Baked Zito or something like that was the name of it. I don't remember what it was called. But
it's a clever name.
Yeah. I always liked that name, Barry Zito.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of people liked him before he signed that huge contract with the Giants.
Welcome to the Sports Flicks podcast. All right, let's talk about some movies. This is a special episode.
Oh, guys. Of all the episodes you've ever listened to of this podcast, mm-hmm. this
season
is,
two. Well, season two is less. This is season three.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, of all the podcasts you've listened to of this podcast, all the episodes, this is the one that you're listening to most currently.
Yep. Yep.
And I say that unequivocally, without reservation, no qualifications on it. You are currently hearing my voice.
It's bold, but I can't disagree with you.
Yeah.
They are listening to this, therefore it's the most current podcast.
Yeah.
Can't doubt it. I'm speechless. I don't have a retort.
You are what I would call post-literate. You are beyond words.
Ooh, I like it.
Thank you.
I like it. Put that one in the... If you're listening out there, the afflicted, I still, that sounds too much like a
yeah.
afflicted. Yeah. Let's just not do that.
Yeah, no. the Flixian Nation, the Flixers, the Mother Flixers.
Flixers. I kind of like the Flixers.
Flixers.
The Flixers out there.
The 70 Flixers.
So when you're putting together the wiki, the Flixer wiki, the Flixy, the Flixy. Okay, I'm just going to stop trying that. Make sure you mark that one down.
Yeah.
Post-literate.
Post-literate.
I'm post-literate.
I'm beyond words.
I like it. Anyway.
So anyway, this is a special episode.
Yes. Very special. Why?
Why? Well, there comes a time in a man's life when he's no longer a boy.
Yeah, if it's bar mitzvah.
Yeah. Well, there's that. But then, like, also later.
I never had a bar mitzvah. I don't know why my parents didn't give me one.
I don't know. Maybe they're against bars.
Assume they didn't love me, probably.
That could have been it. Could have been that you grew up in a predominantly Catholic household.
They don't have bar mitzvahs in Catholicism?
I don't know. I'm not a Catholic.
Do they have them in whatever religion you are?
Buddhism?
Is it
nope,
Buddhism?
Nope. Well, no. I mean, it's an offshoot.
Taoism.
Narcissism.
Dadaism? Okay. Well, narcissism. That's a religion I think a lot of people could get behind.
Yeah.
The problem is the whole...
But there's a lot of conflict about whose God is which God. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
It's very complicated.
Hmm. But yeah, so...
So there comes
after the bar
point,
mitzvah, you look back on...
You look back.
Past the bar mitzvah.
You look back and you say, what is it that has affected my life?
Mm-hmm.
What are the moments in my life that I will cling to? What are the things that make me who I am?
Media is a big part of that.
A huge part of it.
Top five movies that affected you as a child. Go.
The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Aladdin.
All right.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Not the first one, though.
No, that's the only one we had on VHS.
The other ones were lost.
Yeah, they were gone. Wow, this is tough. Field of Dreams.
Okay.
And I said Aladdin already.
Probably Back another baseball movie. Okay, all right. Yeah, so you covered the spectrum there.
Yeah, that's probably from about, that's from like 0 to 13 maybe.
Okay. All right. Interesting that neither of the movies we're going to talk about today were on that list.
They weren't.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
Actually, one of them, I think, came out right around when we would have been about 13, 12 or 13. So that's okay.
I think so.
Because that's coming in late. That might have been on your next list.
Sure.
you know.
Yeah, it does make the next list, which would be high school movies that you and I watched while we were hanging out in my basement.
Incessantly. Yeah. Let's save that for a different podcast, though, even though it's relevant now.
Yeah.
I agree. Top five for me, The Crying Game, probably. What else? Fatal Attraction. Pretty Woman. Rosemary's Baby. And what was that? The last one's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah.
It's hard to pinpoint, right?
Primal Fear?
Sure.
Maybe?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you've always been...
I think that tells you a lot about the differences between...
Yeah, you've always been terrified and terrifying, frankly.
Yes. Well, I don't know if I should take that as a compliment or not, but I also lack the ability to...
Empathize
Determine
with
that.
Anyone.
Yeah, exactly. So,
so
it's
it
fine.
Matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, psychopath. So what we're doing today on the podcast, the Prime Flix podcast, made for all those Flixers out there.
The Flixers.
Is a little trip down memory lane, if you will.
Oh, Wayne's World.
Wayne's World.
That's the other list.
That's the second list. Yeah.
We'll get to that one.
We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. So we are doing a new sort of subset of episodes.
Yes. One might call it a special episode once in a while.
Once in a while, we will try to throw one of these at you.
Movies that, as far as we're concerned, enough time has passed that you should have seen them.
Yes.
And you should have seen them before you had Netflix.
You should have seen them years ago.
You should have saw them maybe on VHS.
Right.
Maybe a poorly recorded copy of it.
Maybe off of ABC television.
And if you're past that time, maybe on a DVD.
Sure.
A physical DVD.
Yep.
That you didn't get from Redbox, but maybe you bought in the store, you rented from a video rental store, which are these places that used to exist where you'd give them some money, and then, you know,
you'd
take
the
movie
thing home.
You wouldn't watch it, and then you'd give them more money.
Because you left it at home beyond the date which they wanted.
Right,
had
already sunk some costs into it, so you thought, well, I better hold on to it and watch it, even though you keep racking up bills and bills and bills, and all of a sudden you can't pay for college.
Right, that's what happened to me.
Yeah, they were basically predatory lenders, really, in like not quite the way they are thought of today, but I mean, they were back then.
Did you ever do the thing where you were like, oh, this is really late. What can I do to like lower this late fee? And then they'll be like, oh, I don't know, go buy some cookies or something.
I never tried that.
I did
so,
that.
Sort of a bartering economy.
Yeah, I did that once.
Yeah.
And I realized that the box of cookies that I bought was probably equivalent to the late fee I had. So I should have just paid it.
Yeah. And then, you know, then you run into this, like, if you start thinking that way, then you go, okay, well, then I gotta steal the cookies because, like,
sure,
you know, I don't want to lose the money, and so then you've committed two crimes,
right?
And you know, but that's just the nature of that sort of relationship, is that it just is a spiral, you know. Mm-hmm. And then once you're caught stealing, then you can't go to the store anymore. Then you've got to rob from people's windowsills, you know, steal their pies and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
It just keeps, I mean, it gets worse and worse.
Yeah, pastry theft is a real crime with real victims.
That's right. It really hit its peak, though, in about the 50s, though. It kind of tapered off.
I think
people got wise to it.
They started putting screens on their windows.
Yeah, let's not just leave it out there for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a golden age of pie stealing.
There was a golden age of pie stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
Two movies.
First movie. Here's what we're determining. We haven't even announced it yet.
Oh,
we've been digressing.
Oh, I my apologies. This is the Does It Hold Up? Does It Hold Up? We're gonna
Does It Hold Up edition of the
podcast.
It's
weird because it is singular, but there's two movies.
There's two movies. Well, we'll determine each of them individually.
Yeah, so we don't want to make
not a pair of movies.
Yeah, and they actually really, other than having affected us apparently at different points in our life, don't really have anything to do with each other.
Agreed.
Other than that they are, you know, we're from a different decade.
Yeah.
Than now.
Yeah.
And long enough in the past that, you know, some might consider them classics at this point.
You know, many people do. Many
is it
people
a classic
do.
After 25 years? What is the...
Sounds right.
It's antique at that point, I think.
Well...
Or does that not apply to movies?
I think it applies to Prince.
Fair enough.
Not Prince, the artist.
No, he's timeless.
Prince with a T.
Oh, Prince.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep. So, first one.
First one.
Batman.
Batman. 1989.
The first film version that I'm aware of.
No, there's actually a film version of the 60s.
Oh, the
60s,
right, the Adam West, yeah.
But this is kind of the first dark version, maybe.
Film based on a not based on another property.
Not based, well,
other than the comic book.
Other than the comic book, the source material.
I mean, the TV show is loosely based on the comic material.
Yeah.
It's a lot campier.
Well, it actually fits Batman of that time period, apparently.
No.
From what I've heard.
Anyway.
But this is based more in the darker, more modern
It's the first time they tried to make it a
big film.
A film, yeah. A feature film that it could stand on its own.
Right.
Yeah.
Precisely.
And interestingly enough, mm-hmm. You know, this is kind of the beginnings of that first what would be a? There were four of them, so a quadrilogy.
Sure.
It's the first quadrilogy of Batman films that were all loosely kind of, not necessarily continuations
were,
of each other.
But they were.
You thought of them as being related?
Yeah, it was continuation of the franchise.
Yeah.
You know, within sort of like a vague same world.
Yeah. There's actually, it's enough time has passed between the Christian Bale version of Batman and the Michael Keaton version of Batman that there's actually a scene in a movie with Seth Rogen and James Franco, the movie's called Neighbors, where they're high and they're sitting on a couch and Seth Rogen is talking to Dave Franco, not James. Did I say James Franco?
You said James, but I believe it's Dave.
Dave Franco. He's talking to Dave Franco, and he says, "Oh, you're so young. Like, who do you think Batman is?" And he's like, "Christian Bale." And he's like, "No, Batman's, you know, Michael Keaton." And then they continue to do like impressions of each Batman back and forth.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
You know, like
that's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So there's a gap there. So some of our younger listeners, for them, Batman might be Christian Bale.
Sure.
And only Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Maybe never gone back to any of.
They don't remember Michael Keaton. They don't remember Val Kilmer.
George Clooney.
They don't remember George Clooney.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So there were a few more Batmans.
They might not even remember the animated series.
Are there more Batmen than Bonds? There's more Bonds.
Good question.
There's what? Adam
That's
West.
Tough.
If we're just talking about ones that have been feature films.
Okay.
Adam West.
Michael Keaton.
Val Kilmer.
George Clooney. Christian Bale.
Ben Affleck? Not yet, but he will be.
Yeah.
So I think it's confirmed. So
yeah.
Six. You've got
Sean Connery.
Roger Moore.
Roger Moore. George Lazenby.
Timothy Dalton.
Pierce Brosnan. Craig. Michael Craig?
Michael Craig? No. Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Close.
And if you count it, there was that early like Woody Allen version.
The Casino Royale one?
Yeah.
Oh. Was that Peter Sellers? Who was that? Whatever.
I don't know. Woody Allen.
Getting off the topic. So it's pretty close. It's probably six or seven, depending on the count. Yeah.
For both.
Yeah. So what if there was a movie where all living Batman faced off against all living Bond characters? That would be interesting.
I would watch it.
I would totally watch that. Anyway, Batman. That's one. What's the other film?
Oh, the other film. We talked about how we couldn't think of any other films with frogs.
Yeah.
Don't know what we were thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Muppet Treasure Island. As far as I'm concerned, the best entry in the Muppet canon.
Wow.
Yeah, I know that's a big statement.
Here's the thing. I am not as familiar with the film work of the Muppets as you are, so I must take your word here.
I don't know what the consensus is on the other films, if like Muppets Take Manhattan or Muppets in Space is considered better, or just the Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all of them. I like it when it's the Muppets in a world that is not the Muppets. So because it's always that wink and wink, nudge that they're like, they're still themselves, but they're playing these characters.
Right.
Which is very much true in Muppet
Treasure
Island.
Which is like the Muppet Show.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And then, and also, and you also had Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yep.
Which is kind of the same thing.
Yep. Did that come out before or after this?
That's a really good question. I meant to look that up. I forgot.
Okay.
I want to say that it came up maybe just a little bit before.
Okay.
But I don't remember. In that one, though.
Crossover.
Michael Caine.
There you go. Man, it's like he's, it's like his spirit is here
with
us.
He's everywhere.
Yeah. This one is kind of a cheater for me to include, and does it hold up? Because the answer is, spoiler alert, yes, for me, it will always hold up. So, but I will, never miss an opportunity to talk about this movie. So let's talk about Batman first.
Mm-hmm.
Because time has passed. I haven't seen this Batman. I saw Batman Returns like 7,000 times more than I saw the other ones.
I saw Batman Returns more times as well. I actually remember seeing Batman Returns in the theater.
Okay. It would have been the same for me. I never saw the original in theater, but I saw the rest of them in the theater.
Yeah.
And I really love Jim Carrey, so I probably have actually seen Batman Forever more times than I've seen the original Batman.
Nice.
It was Goofy and Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, you're not making a judgment. You're just saying that's what you watched when you were a kid.
Yeah, and I watched it. Yeah, and
it's the whole point of this segment.
Exactly. So we're going back to it and getting our thoughts on it. What's first thing that hit you when you watched this? Because you watched it kind of independent of the podcast, and then we're like, why don't we talk about it?
Yeah. I will say I watched it. I watch it now. I watched it maybe like 8 years ago.
Okay.
And then before that, it was like I saw it a couple of times as a kid. So I don't have a huge history with this one because, like yourself, I watched Returns more often than this one. My first impression is the suit is awesome.
Yeah, I always like this suit better.
I mean, it's rubber.
Yeah.
But it looks like it came right out of the comic book. Mm-hmm. I really like that. And I know that the yellow symbol is not practical.
Sure.
But it's straight, like, ripped off of the pages. I really like the suit.
Yeah. I like this one, too.
And it's pre-nipple.
That's true. I mean, there have been some egregious bat suits. The new Christopher Nolan bat suit is fitting for that Batman.
Definitely.
That Batman exists in a different world.
It's 100% practical. And
it's like a combat helmet.
Yeah.
You know, it's got extra padding. You could see a person actually wearing that. Whereas, you know, it's very clear this is a limitation of the suit itself, but how rigid he is in this movie. Must have done a better job with Christian Bale, or they made his suit move better. Like, he doesn't seem as rigid.
Yeah, he can articulate his head.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that Michael Keaton could.
No, this Batman is very, he's either so confident in his abilities that he just single file, straight as a stick, like marches at the bad guys and punches them and everything.
Which gives him kind of an interesting like presence on screen, I thought, because it does give him that sort of like air of confidence. Like, I can turn my entire body to the side and kick you and feel confident that you're not going to like get me while I'm turned.
Totally. Yeah. Thing that hit me about this movie.
Yeah.
I totally forgot what the Joker was doing in it. I knew that he was in it and he was a bad guy, but I forgot what his scheme was, like, to mess with Gotham. I forgot that it was this involvement of tainting the beauty supply of Gotham, and that was his like way that he was hurting people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I totally didn't. I mean,
feel like that's such a minor point in the film. I didn't even really.
No, it's a pretty big. I mean, they keep coming back to it. Like they you know, they have the. I was actually going to talk about this. There's a little bit of the you can see the edges of Tim Burton in this a little bit. But they, you know, he's regularly talking about how, like, Batman figures out, because Gotham goes crazy because they can't, like, wear deodorant, makeup, hairspray, anything, because the Joker's tainted the chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what chemicals are causing it. So they have, you know, completely abandoned using any of these things, and Batman figures out through some of analysis that it's a certain combinations of things. It's not just deodorant on its own. It's like if you have deodorant and hairspray it causes
kick-ass computer in his in his Batcave.
It's got the nice spinning discs in there and everything. Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I was distracted. Maybe I was doing laundry or something.
No, it's okay. But I mean, it maybe it is a minor thing, But you know, the big thing is that this concoction makes their faces all contort into a big smile, which is something that's been used elsewhere, like in the Batman animated series and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like
and in the comics as well,
right? Mm-hmm. So that was, and it for Batman, it doesn't actually matter what the Joker's doing. You just know he's trying to mess stuff up.
Yep,
that's sort of his motivation. This is actually, of like all the Joker stories, one of the few where they actually try to explain his origin a lot more than any of the others.
Well, and they go out of their way to like name him Jack Napier, right? Which is the, which we only find out like in the comics, like 40 or 50 years after his creation, that was I don't even remember. Was it Frank Miller that wrote that particular story? It wasn't.
I think.
Somebody else. Alan Moore or something.
Yeah.
But wrote that particular story, and you find his origin. And like here, it's a different origin story, but it's the same character name. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. And that's actually, I get why it makes good narrative sense here. Like, I also forgot... I forgot that I thought it, you know, just without thinking about the movie, I thought that at the beginning of it, they show the kid getting and his parents getting mugged. I originally thought that the first opening scene was his parents getting killed, and the "Did you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?" That scene. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that doesn't get revealed till like halfway through the movie.
Yeah,
and then you make the connection between the two, and you know, and I was like, oh, that's like such a better reveal. Initially I thought that was the very first scene, but it's just this, it's actually just a smoke screen. The first, the first scene
is really
like
smart.
Not actually him getting, you know, And then in this version, I guess I also got a sense that Batman in this version, it's weird that he's a billionaire and that like most people pretend like they don't know who he is.
Yeah.
You know?
So one of the conversations I remember having as a kid talking about the four movies prior to the
modern
Nolan
trilogy
is who made a better Batman and who made a better Bruce Wayne.
Oh right, yeah.
And
it's always the distinction between the two.
Yeah, exactly. And I always felt that Keaton made a pretty good Batman. I like him as Batman. I hate him as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
I can't, not because I don't like watching him on screen, but because it's completely unrealistic that he is like this millionaire playboy.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. He's doing like Michael Keaton-y stuff, which is incredibly endearing and very
goofy and,
you know,
charming,
goofy and
whatever, yeah.
And charming.
But in like a goofy way, not in a like, I could crush you with my wallet kind of way.
Right. Like, whereas Val Kilmer, like, I believe as this playboy.
Yeah.
You know, this millionaire playboy who, you know,
eccentric weirdo.
Exactly. But but I don't believe Michael Keaton for a second.
Yeah, I agree. I remember that actually, because there were so many Batmen back then that you could have these conversations. And, you know, half the movie, as is usually the case with superhero movies, is the character and the alter ego. And so you get two movies in one, essentially, most of the time. The thing is just that Vicky Vale, okay, you get the sense that she's been off in Africa taking photos. So, like, if she comes back to, she comes to Gotham and doesn't know who Bruce Wayne is,
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That other guy who's got his nose
who's like
and
a
everything,
beat reporter,
he would know who Bruce Wayne is because Bruce Wayne is a billionaire in this city. And in all stories, all tellings of Batman, his family's hugely influential.
Yes.
In Gotham.
Yeah. Basically built Gotham. Like his parents come from the two like biggest families in Gotham.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. That is weird.
What do you think of this Joker, of Jack Nicholson's Joker? Jack Nicholson's Joker. I always say Jack Nicholson. That's a golfer.
Yeah. I don't know. It's fine.
Here's what's weird about this movie, and I think what makes me ambivalent about him as a Joker in this movie.
Yeah.
He plays the Joker dark and campy, but primarily dark. When he's good in the movie, it's when he's dark, I think. And this movie is trying to walk this weird line where it's trying to be light, but the subject matter is really dark. You know, like he's tainting this stuff to kill people. You know, he says something like, "I'm an artist. It's not art until someone dies," or something like that, right? And it's like it I feel his struggle of between trying to like dance through the art museum to this stupid 90s song with his like goofy guys with their beatboxes like messing up art things. Like that was so 90s. It's like, I mean, I know this was 89, but like that to me is a very 90s scene. So it's on the cusp of that. It's so goofy and stupid. And I get that that's kind of the era and that's Tim Burton. You see a lot more of that, but kind of done better in the second. And I think that's why Batman Returns I like better as a movie. But I just, you're like, this is a great actor, but I don't know. And I feel like up until you saw Heath Ledger play the Joker, you were like,
can it be done?
Yeah, yeah. People were like, oh, you know, he did a pretty good job. Like, you know, and he was probably ranked among like TV or like movie villains as being one of the great villains. But like in retrospect, I don't know.
I don't think it works that well.
Yeah, it's actually pretty bad.
I think that's a you mentioned it, but I think it's a problem in tone for the whole movie. Yeah. I think the movie can't decide what it wants to be.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, and this is a side thing, but as you're describing the Joker, and the stuff that happens in that movie, I cannot remember that part of the movie.
What the?
For the life of me, like the stuff where he's like dancing around and he's like, like I know that it happened, and even the like the plot part. So like, and I watched this movie just a couple of weeks before we decided to record this podcast in particular, and for some reason that's escaping me. I remember the Batman stuff, but the Joker stuff is escaping me, and maybe that's a fault of the Joker, you know?
Yeah, and there's some things that are that. Getting back to it being a Tim Burton thing and weird and whatever, there's like, they show the TV anchors and they're talking about how the Joker's messing with Gotham, blah, blah, blah. And then they cut to like the factory, all this stuff happening. And then they cut back to the anchors later on after like this whole thing has happened. And there's this visual gag where like her hair is all frizzy and she's got no makeup on and the guy's got all these like boils on his face.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and they're like trying to, and I'm like, this is supposed to be funny. But it's not.
Yeah.
And why is it trying to be funny when like he's doing these evil things? Like he's, I don't know. It's just a weird handling of it. And that, you know, when he comes in, they're dancing on the float and they're throwing money out to people at the very end with all the balloons and poisoning people in Gotham. Like, right. I don't know. It just like it really bothered me. But I think if you think about this movie as a bridge between Adam West Batman,
yes,
and Batman Returns, then you kind of understand that Burton was probably a little bit conflicted. Like people like my parents who watch the, you know, goofy wham pow zap Batman are going to go expecting that.
Yeah.
And modern audiences are going to want something a little bit more like a modern crime film.
Yeah, a little bit darker and grittier.
Yeah.
Well,
and
that's
not to say that, you know, Batman Returns has penguins with missile launchers on their back.
It's got its own issues.
Yeah.
I actually watched that one right around the same time.
Yeah.
And it does have some of the same, like, tone issues and whatever. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think the darker stuff is the stuff that spoke more to me. That first time that he confronts those two guys on the rooftop, when we kind of first see the suit and the like, they shoot him and he falls over hard.
Mm-hmm.
He hits the deck like he has been shot.
Yeah,
and then they are terrified out of their minds as he rises like a bat, you know, sort of like a vampire from the dead. And that is like, to me, like the best moment in the film, which is unfortunate because it's in the first 5 minutes, but but it's like, that's what Batman is.
Batman's a wraith. He's a scary like being that, you know. And they do, you know, they even set that up with them talking about like, oh, I heard the bat got him or whatever, you know, and they're like, ah, Batman, whatever. I did like that in a sense. This was kind of an origin film, but he was already Batman.
I kind of like that too. They kind of, I don't want to say gloss over, but it's not
as important.
It's not like Batman Begins, for example,
right?
Or like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Or like The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Or the Fantastic Four. Any of these films, like for the last 15 years we've been watching where the first film is origin story told chronologically, basically.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's sort of, it's what do they call that? What's that thing from, like, Greek oral histories, like immedia res or something. It means in the middle of things.
Yeah,
that's where we begin with this film, and I think that's a really effective tool.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that they're trying to change, and they've said they'll change in the next Spider-Man, even though it's the third reboot.
Yeah,
the second reboot of Spider-Man. That they're finally going to just go, yeah, he's Spider-Man. He starts as Spider-Man. You know he's Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, yeah, fine. Yeah. How many times do we need the origin story in the last...
Yeah, but I mean, if you think even about the Nolan films, Batman Begins almost at this point feels superfluous.
It does.
You could probably have The Dark Knight start and most people would be on board right away. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool because it does tell that background story for people who maybe aren't aware of, like, one of the versions of Batman's origin.
Yep.
But it doesn't... No one points to that one. People talk about Bane. People talk about the Joker. No one talks about Ra's al Ghul and the Scarecrow, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But... So even that was, like, a whole movie dedicated to his origin, and it's kind of now you're going, no, I didn't really need it.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's because, in part, I think The Dark Knight was almost a reboot of the reboot.
Yeah, a little bit.
It was so... as a film, it's so much like further beyond the thesis that Batman Begins laid out.
Yeah,
it's completely separate almost. Mm-hmm. But still, like, you can still lump them together because same aesthetic, same actors. You
sure.
know, but
so what? I mean,
okay,
what do you? Does it hold up?
I don't think it does.
Yeah.
And for the reasons I've mentioned. And now I'm almost wondering if I even finished the film when I started watching it. Because I'm like, I don't remember any of this stuff. And I think it's twofold. I think it's maybe I didn't finish the film. And I think it's just that it didn't stick with me. But the stuff that I liked, I did like.
Yeah.
It kind of introduces this this aesthetic that Tim Burton has made his career on.
Sure.
And I don't care for Tim Burton as a director,
yeah.
but he can art direct anything for me.
True.
I'm on board with that.
Yeah. 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 I'm a good prepared podcast participant. So I did actually watch the whole thing.
No, I'm feeling terrible now.
I remember a lot of lines from it, you know, and I remember there's like one scene where they're in like the factory, I think, and Batman kind of like steps to the side and the guys run around the corner and he does this back fist to the face. So there's some things that'll always stick
with me. Which we'll see in our second film.
Yes, yes. But I kind of don't, it doesn't hold up for me either.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of was afraid of watching it because I was very afraid of this actually happening. And so I that's where I kind of feel about
because it's in the same family of both chronological era and some of the other things that are involved with it. Batman the Animated Series, much of that still holds up. I've watched a lot of that recently.
Yeah.
Much of that still holds up, and it takes the aesthetic that was first given to us through Batman and Batman Returns and it puts it in an animated world and it walks that line that you were talking about really well because it's animated, I think.
Because it's all available in case the Flixers out there want to know.
It's on the Prime.
It's on Prime. You can watch the entire series on there. And
may or may not be why I have Prime.
It's true. No, it's the reason you have it. It's the reason you had it in the first place.
Yep.
Anyway, but I've gone back and watched the first half of the first season, and it's really good. And also, Harley Quinn has become a very popular character these days. and she got her start. One of the only characters that I'm aware of that started on a TV show,
yeah,
instead of in the comic canon.
There's been a couple of them, but she was one of the ones, I think.
She's got her own book now. Yeah. She's in everybody else's stuff. I mean, if you go to a comic book shop today, yeah, and you go look at the shelf, you'll see like 12 pictures of Harley Quinn.
I mean, they're making that things. Suicide Squad movie, and like everybody's geeked about, yep, Harley Quinn being in it.
Yep, exactly. I read an interesting article about Harley Quinn. If I can find it, I'll post it in the show notes. But nice. Yeah. So
I'm sorry. We didn't do one thing.
Yeah.
We didn't give credit to Danny Elfman for his score.
He has a great score. We'll play a little bit of it here for you first in a second.
It'll start in you.
Yeah. Gonna cue it up here. Yeah, so there's a little taste of
that's
it.
That's just gorgeous.
It is, and that's iconic.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's absolutely what the animated series used as a theme, as like a backing for like any major scene. It was just like this is just. I mean, Danny Elfman is a prolific movie composer. Mm-hmm. Like he does a lot of Tim Burton stuff, but he does a ton of other stuff too. Like off the top of my head, I know that he did like Spider-Man. And,
oh yeah, he's up there with like, he's more prolific probably than like John Williams.
Yeah,
he's just like,
exactly.
He's in everything.
He just works on everything.
And every time I listen to, I think he did Nightmare Before Christmas too.
I think so.
It's like every movie where I'm like, oh, I kind of like this. I like, oh, Danny Elfman.
Yeah, if it's just a little bit weird.
Yeah,
there's Danny Elfman in it. You know, this is top notch stuff.
Yeah, and he did this. He did the Simpsons theme too, which I always forget about. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. And probably didn't get. I mean, maybe who knows? Maybe got nominated or something. But it probably doesn't get as much credit for that movie being, you know, like classic, quote unquote classic, as it is. Okay, we got to move on.
Should I make a quick mea culpa?
It's up to you if you want to.
I mean, look, listeners, I just looked up my account on Amazon Prime, and I definitely did not finish Batman like I thought I had. So everything I've said is with a grain of salt, except for those scenes which I actually saw. And take Ed's word on this one.
Yeah, always take my word anyway.
Yeah.
So the other movie was a movie that's very near and dear to my heart, and Dean would even say, and probably rightly so, that it was one of the most influential movies of my young life, and this was Muppet Treasure Island.
A day was spent at my house watching this movie over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, so I couldn't quote the whole movie, but I knew the lines coming up, every line that was being said.
Yeah. You actually introduced this movie to me in high school. I hadn't seen it previously.
Interesting.
And you were like, oh, we're going to watch this movie. And I was like, okay. And then you were like, we're going to watch this movie again. And now we're going to watch it again.
It sounds like the stupidest concept, and it is. And that's kind of what's brilliant about it. Is that it's, and one thing that I noticed about it this time around, that if you actually watch some of the other Muppet movies, isn't true, is that they left it relatively free of era. So what I mean by that is it's meant to be in Treasure Island times or whatever, but the jokes, some are modern, but there's never anything of reference
enough
other than like NBA or something like that in it. So it's never like, oh, this is like Bill Clinton or something like that where you can place it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at some of the more recent Muppet movies that have come out in the last couple of years, there's quite a few jokes in there. There's songs
that
from
might
that
not
era.
Hold up.
Yeah. Well, there's like the chickens in the very first new Muppet movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So that, you know, things like that. That maybe it'll hold up, but you know, to someone 20 years from that movie, we'll be able to go, oh, that was that song that was popular
right
then. Whereas this one doesn't really have that. It's just such a great concept. And I love in these Muppet themed movies, where they're the Muppets as a cast of characters playing things, that they adhere to the kind of old stage and you know, I'm probably not saying this correctly, but there's kind of a tradition in old stage stuff to have sort of like an onstage narrator or like a person guiding you through the show, like mm-hmm. like and Gonzo and Rizzo play themselves in these movies,
yeah,
and they're always just in these, like they're in Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol
yeah,
version
yeah. as Gonzo,
as
and,
Gonzo
Rizzo.
And Rizzo,
and they, even in the credits they say Gonzo and Rizzo
as themselves. Yeah,
yeah.
So they're there to be sort of the storytellers, narrators, to be there with you, and it's not at all strange because even though it's Captain Smollett, you know, you yeah. still know it's just Kermit, and
yeah.
they don't even change the voice or anything. Like, and that's great.
No, and sometimes they even make reference to it.
Exactly.
You know, it's
they break the fourth wall.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a Muppet Treasure Island drinking game, and when they break the fourth wall, is one of the
that's
the
awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. One of my favorite scenes is because they have these. Rizzo is running a cruise ship for rats.
Yeah.
And they're all like modern, right?
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
all dressed like modern
yep.
Dress, and then they
like the Love Boat.
Yeah, yeah, and then they come by, and there's this big scene where Kermit and Miss Piggy are gonna have it out.
Yeah,
as to like their relationship, and just before it happens, you have a wide shot of them, and then right in the foreground is the tour, and they're coming through, and they're like, and now this is like one of the actual locations that was used for the filming of Muppet Treasure Island. that's so fun and smart.
Yeah, I love it. I love that they can. I mean, like. And this movie's just fun all around. The worst thing about it is probably the music, actually, in a lot of the cases. And it's not the music's fault. It's just like there's great casting. You've got Tim Curry.
Yeah. The human beings in this movie, mm-hmm. And it's got to be incredibly hard to do. I've never had to act with a puppet.
Yeah.
But they are committed to it 100%.
Totally.
There's nobody that's dropping the ball.
Yep.
You know, in working with these Muppets as actual other performers.
Yeah.
And I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great.
And he's a world-class performer.
Yeah, no, just in general. I mean, and I didn't mean to say that, like, any of the musical performances were bad or anything
No.
That. But there's just some, because it is a musical, they fill some spots with music where just kind of like, eh. Like, there's a part where he's singing about, like, there's a part with him and with Jim and Long John Silver where they're singing about like how he's singing this really high falsetto about like he's gonna like live the life his father led, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just
like on the bow of the ship. And,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's the sort of like heart stuff that,
exactly.
that Muppets always has.
True.
But it's just a little bit mushier than I would prefer.
But on the other hand, I love songs like "Hey Ho, We'll Go Anywhere the Wind Is Blowing."
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Today I was saying like people die by falling overboard.
Yeah,
you know,
like, yeah. Well, and like the I love the and again it's like it's not quite breaking the fourth wall, but it is breaking the suspension of disbelief,
yeah.
But where Arrow, played by Sam the Eagle,
yeah.
Says to Long John Silver, he says, "No need to get sloppy just because we're singing."
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, it is, yeah, because that's one thing in musicals that people always talk about is like no one breaks out into song in real life, you know, and in musicals. They don't ever acknowledge the fact that they're singing.
Right.
You know, because that's kind of breaking a way of breaking the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. I'm glad you brought that up because he's one of my favorite characters in the movie.
Oh,
in general.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It almost makes you wish for more Sam the Eagle and other stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's a funny bit with him where he's like most recent Muppets Most Wanted, where he's like an Interpol agent,
okay.
I think, and he has this standoff with Ty Burrell where they're like pulling rank on each other, mm-hmm. and he like they keep like showing bigger badges, and he unveils like this giant badge, you know, like
nice.
So it's a funny bit, but yeah, he's so great at this, like when he's testing the lifeboats, and he just like goes off.
Oh,
in
this
the
is very safe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gotta quit.
Yeah. Those who are caught dawdling will be shot on sight, you know? And he's like,
yeah.
I didn't say that. I was paraphrasing. yeah, so he's
merely anticipating your whim, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And just, yeah, there's like Mr. Bimble, and I just love so many of the things about this
movie. Yeah, and that particular bit is only in this film. That's not a thing that like
Fozzie does
everywhere else, right? That's just in this film. He believes he has a man living inside his finger that tells him what to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
such a strange affectation, but it works so well. I regularly find myself, you know, this is one of those movies that I you know, it came out in 1996, so it's almost 20 years old, and I think I've referenced it like 2 or 3 times in the last week. Wow. Just like in regular, like there's a coffee place like a half mile from here called Zanzibar.
Yes.
So I always say like to meet the Zanzibarbarians, you know, like I say stuff about the Black Spot or, you know, my favorite, which I think is a lot of people's favorites, which, I think we have a clip of.
Okay.
Tom's dead. Long John shot him.
But Dead Tom's always been dead. That's why he's called Dead Tom.
Oh. And then he just drops it.
I just love the that's an extension of an earlier gag when they're doing the pirate roll call.
Right.
You know, big fat bug face baby eating O'Brien.
Oi.
You know, and like and then it's Tom, old Tom, real old Tom, dead Tom. Tom.
Yeah. Yep.
They're just holding him up. Hi. You know, and I don't know, just some good writing that they were like, let's bring him back, you know, like, because then you can have someone be shot who's not,
exactly.
Yeah, he's already dead, so you don't have to have him die. Speaking of great deaths, Billy Connolly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Jimmy.
Be careful running with scissors. Because you always end up losing an eye. Yeah, I love that whole, like, that's one of my favorite running gags in any, like, in any movie, when they make fun of the extended death sequence.
Yep.
That's great.
And it's so...
The worst thing about it is that he's not in the movie longer.
Right.
Yeah.
He starts out narrating it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see that it's just a voiceover of him actually telling the story within the pub or the tavern, which is fine too. But it's some of Billy Connolly's best work, frankly.
It's true.
It's really good stuff.
It's true.
He. Oh man. I don't know. I can't say enough good things about this movie. I was expecting it not to enjoy it as much as I enjoyed it.
Yeah, because you rewatched it. The full thing this time.
Yeah, right? I watched the whole thing.
All right, good, good.
Yeah. So, God, I can't believe I did that. I feel like such a jerk.
That's okay.
It was really enjoyable. There was one, two things that I didn't care for. One of them was that one scene is a little bit mushy.
Yeah. There's a side stuff with Kermit and Miss Piggy
always a little bit. Although I like that song, and I like what they did with the Kermit and Miss Piggy song. So they're hanging upside down from the cliff.
Yeah.
And they're singing this love song. And the lyrics are, love brought us here.
Yeah.
Right? What you see, though... is a slow-mo montage of the pirates actually getting to the gold and celebrating that they've gotten the gold. So as it says, love brought us here, you see Long John Silver walk into this room of gold and like just like turn with a huge smile on his face. Yeah. It's hysterical.
Yeah, that's great.
It's like they knew.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
But there's a bit that doesn't work at the beginning.
Okay.
And it bothered me the last time I tried to watch this, like 4 or 5 years ago, too. Mm-hmm. And it's the how does she do that bit.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
Because it's forced.
Yeah.
Like, they don't set it up enough to make it a recurring bit.
Right.
I feel like.
Exactly.
Because the first time you hear it, it's how does she do that? Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be like the third or fourth time you hear it.
Right.
And so it just doesn't quite work because I was looking for the setup.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one that, you know, like I was looking at, kind of researching this movie. I was curious if there were any of those like BuzzFeed articles or anything out there about this movie where people were reflecting on it to see if there's anything I missed or Easter eggs or something, you know?
Yeah.
And there's not much actually, but, one of the things that, you know, people were like quoting, you know, different quotes that are like from Dead Tom's Dead, The Black Spot, like Clueless Morgan, like just those little like one-liner throwaway things. And someone was putting like, how does she do that? And it, yeah, it does. It's a play on the same kind of thing like Frau Blücher in Young Frankenstein, but that has a much bigger build. Like, she's gone after the first like 10 minutes of the movie.
Right.
So it's like, what's the, this isn't going to be recurrent. Like, isn't as funny as Frau Blücher, because that can be like
throughout the whole film.
You can forget about it for like half the movie and then all of a sudden it just comes back.
Yeah.
And it's like, ah, oh, that's funny. It's a callback, you know? And so it, I guess, I wonder if that's just, it was just a failed bit, or maybe they had cut some stuff. Or,
yeah,
you know,
it's entirely possible that they cut some stuff.
That whole beginning could have been really shrunk.
Yeah,
because
the whole rest of the movie is so tight.
Yeah,
that it just makes me think that they were like looking for a place to cut or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's also so many. The great thing about the Muppets, and that you can't do obviously with human actors, is that they've created every kind of Muppet. So there's a gag for every kind of Muppet, you know, like he's a lobster instead of a parrot, you know, like there's a joke even in the beginning where she's like, come back tomorrow, we've got roast suckling potatoes. And this little potato woman walks by, she's like, oh, sorry, ma'am, no offense. Meh. And then like walks away, you know, like.
And that's a callback to like 3 minutes earlier in the film, too, which is even better because she calls like Billy Connolly like a pig.
Yeah.
And there are pigs sitting in it. Oh, no offense.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And you could just do that because if you don't have that Muppet already, you can introduce a new one.
Yep.
You know, actually in one of the, I don't know if it was, which one it was, one of them, they introduced this character that's like, what is his name? He has like a Latin name. He's a little guy.
Oh,
I think he's
Pepe.
Shrimp.
He's like a shrimp. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they created him probably for just like one gag, and then they kind of kept him around for stuff. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a dance instructor or something.
Part of the current, like Muppets
the cast
lineup. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's after this film, but
yeah. So,
the way in which like the, I guess I said the humans interacting with the Muppets already.
Yeah.
But I think what's amazing to me is that this is cartoons like live action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't seem as hokey as if it were all humans.
Yeah.
I don't know what the difference is there. I think it's maybe because they're animals. You know, a lot of them are animals and they're like fuzzy and
you mean
whatever.
If they were all Muppets that were made to look like people, then it wouldn't
no,
be
if
as
they were all like people like in the same roles, kind of.
Oh, okay.
Like take like they're not puppets. They're just people, and it's sort of the same
musical
like,
Treasure Island movie.
Musical Treasure Island goofy movie, but it just works better with like fuzzy animals. Like the little goat with the buck tooth.
Yeah.
Like he just
Clueless Morgan.
Yeah. He just works better as a little goat than he
totally
would as a person.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me, like, I was trying to figure out how they determine which role is going to be a person and which role is going to be a Muppet. I don't know what the casting session's like. Do you have to sit in a room and there's, like, a line of Muppets that look exactly like you? And then
I bet there's a ratio of human to Muppets.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not for specific characters, but if you think about even just the more recent ones, the first Muppet movie released in the 2000s or whatever, whenever the, I don't know, the one with Jason Segel in it, Jason Segel and Amy Adams were like the humans in that.
Yeah.
And there was a human Muppet named Walter.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in this one, you've got other human characters, but it's Tim Curry and this kid. And there's other characters in the background, but they're not really, they're even just there to fill up space. Most of the time they don't talk, they don't do much of anything, right?
Yeah.
And then even in the most recent incarnation, you know, you've got like a bad guy, you've got like Tina Fey and Ty Burrell, like, so it's always only like a few humans. And I think that's probably so the audience member is like identifying with that character. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like that'd be my theory is like what would be cooler than just hanging out with the Muppets all day? Like, that would be amazing, right?
It'd be great.
So if you can watch a movie and you can pretend that you're that that guy hanging out with all those Muppets, or you can at least identify with them in that way, it brings you into it. But if there's too many humans, all of a sudden it's like, wait, are we supposed to take this seriously or not? You know?
Yeah.
And same thing with, you know, Sesame Street or any like thing with Muppets involved. Even like Avenue Q, there's only a few human characters in Avenue Q. It's right. Mostly Muppets. But yeah, it's I don't know. And they sometimes will supplement with a human Muppet, like Walter.
Yeah.
Right? But I keep bad mouthing it, but I really like the Jason Segel Muppet one.
Oh yeah, me too.
I didn't actually like Muppets Most Wanted that much. That was the more recent one. But the Jason Segel one is really good, and yeah, there's some really funny
it.
Like the whistling and the mirror scene where they're looking at themselves in the mirror.
Oh yeah, and that's the songs in it are top notch. Speaking of songs. Songs in this are really great.
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot of fun. I don't know how well they hold up as songs outside of the musical.
Yeah.
You know, like, would I go and listen to this soundtrack? I'm not entirely sure that I would.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
But within the construct of, like, what was the song? There was one song that I found, like, sort of moving.
Hmm.
And I'm having trouble remembering it. Which one in particular it was. I'll look back at the chapters and see if I can name it for you later. But
wasn't Cabin Fever.
It wasn't Cabin
Fever. It wasn't the mushy one on the bow.
I don't think so. No.
It wasn't the one. It wasn't the
You know what it was? It was the one. It was the one at the beginning when they're stuck in the tavern and they're like cleaning up and they're like, oh, but I'd rather be out on the ocean.
Oh yeah.
I actually thought that was like a really moving song.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't like get teared up or anything, but like,
sure.
But like I really identified with that song and like, and the premise that it put forth that
they're dreaming of adventure.
They're dreaming of adventure. Yeah. Dreaming of adventure is the name of the song.
Yeah. On the big blue wet thing.
Yeah.
They're sailing for adventure.
Sailing for adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big blue wet thing.
The big
blue
wet thing, yeah.
The what? The ocean? Yeah. Great, yeah. Great movie. So, holds up for me.
I think it totally holds up, and I did not expect it to hold up as well as it did. I stand corrected. I did watch the whole film this time, and boy, did I really enjoyed it.
It's pretty awesome.
So fun.
All right, well, that probably does it for this podcast, and I'll just get the old music going again. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can find more of this ilk at primeflixpod.com.
All sorts of this ilk.
So much ilk. So much ilk, it'll make you ill.
Ooh.
Our ilk will make you ill. You can leave us an audio review there. You can find us on pretty much any social network, but I'd try like Twitter first.
We're on several of them.
At PrimeFlix. You can write us an email, feedback@primeflixpod.com.
I wish you would.
Anyway, those guys, we don't pay them enough to stick around and play.
They gotta figure out where our endpoint is.
You know what I mean? Guys, next time let's drag it out a little bit. This has been PrimeFlix. I was Ed.
And I'm always Dean.
We'll see you on the internet.